You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We take a look at the political procedures of the U.S. Senate. One thing unique to that body is the filibuster, a tactic to slow or even stop debate. But not everybody's a fan of the filibuster. Some 2020 Democratic presidential candidates are talking about whether to get rid of it altogether. Sarah Binder is a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution and professor of political science at George Washington University. Sarah, welcome to Central Time.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, briefly remind us, what does filibustering allow senators to do?
So a filibuster is really extended debate, right? It means that a Senate majority can't just vote to cut off debate, right? And that means small groups of senators, 40 senators, right? Small groups of senators can block a majority of the Senate from pushing ahead on its agenda. It can change the topics. It can talk about things unrelated. It can grind the Senate to a halt. It can hold a measure hostage until it gets its way on a different measure. But the filibuster empowers both individual senators and then small factions of senators within the broader chamber.
And this isn't something that's in the Constitution, right? This came about as a Senate rule. Do I have that right?
So the Constitution was very clear. It said that the House and Senate can write their own rules. And at the beginning, back in 1789, House and Senate had a pretty similar rule book. And then some historical things happened. We can talk about if we want. But essentially, the Senate got rid of the one rule that today the House uses to allow a majority to cut off debate. And once that rule is dropped from the rule book, right, senators realize there is no rule that somebody can call to cut off debate. And that allows senators to talk right until everybody's ready, right? Everybody has to decide. Otherwise, a single senator could still hold the floor and keep talking.
I got to ask about the name, because I'm really curious about this. I know at one point a filibuster in American history was somebody who went to a foreign country, usually part of the Spanish Empire, tried to start a rebellion and get them to join the United States. How did a filibuster go from that to this?
So that's a little murky. We think sometime in the 19th century, a senator or two, when the term of these filibusterers across Latin America was more common, that somebody applied it to the Senate because one senator was essentially sort of rough riding over the interests and the rights of the other senators.
Now, what is the effect of the filibuster on the way legislation happens? Some people have said this is good. It moderates things. It keeps one party from running roughshod over the other. Other people say it just bogs things down. What do you see as the impact?
So one thing to keep in mind is this. If we lived in a world today where the two parties really weren't that far apart, right? And so if in today's rules in the Senate, the way you cut off a debate, the way you kill a filibuster is we use a rule called cloture. And that means you need 60 senators to agree. So if, let's say, the Democrats had 52 seats, and let's say the Republicans had 48, but they really weren't very far apart. They didn't really disagree all that much. It wasn't that partisan. Then what you'd have to do to change a bill to get the vote of 60 senators, it probably would moderate legislation, right? Instead of suspending, say, $200 million on national parks, maybe we'd moderate it because a Republican would disagree. Maybe we'd moderate it made to $180 million. But that's not the Senate we live in today, right? We live in a Senate where the two parties are pretty far apart on all sorts of issues, right? And then what do you have to do to change a bill to get 60 senators to agree? Well, some people would say maybe that's not really moderating legislation. And maybe sometimes the minority filibusters because they don't want any legislation. And then you have to wonder, well, but is the filibuster really a force for good, or does it do more harm over time?
When we think of filibusters, we might think of the dramatic moment we heard in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where somebody has to get there and they have to actually physically be there and keep talking the whole time. That isn't really how you can just kind of like threaten the filibuster, basically. Is that right?
Yeah. And over, I would say, the last several decades, once the Senate put in place the 60-vote rule, and they sort of nailed that down in 1975, it just became easier as the workloads got larger and people wanted to be out. Senators want to raise money. They're traveling. They're back home. Nobody really wants to spend their time on the floor overnight. And so it's just easier to threaten. And leaders will hear those threats and they'll say, okay, we'll just move on to something else, which, of course, just right, encourages all the other senators to threaten the filibuster, knowing they're not going to have to show up and talk all night.
Talking to Sarah Bender from the Brookings Institution and George Washington University, looking at the past, present, and future of the U.S. Senate's filibuster. Sarah, we've seen some erosion lately in the filibuster when it comes to appointing judicial candidates. Supreme Court justices, for example, has been on the table as a big possible change. What have you seen lately?
So starting in it was 2013, when the Democrats were in control of the Senate, frustration with Republican tactics blocking President Obama's nominees convinced Democrats to do what we call nuke the filibuster, or nuke the cloture rule, that 60-vote rule. So, and we can, the dynamics here get a little in the weeds about how Senate procedure works, but essentially a majority of the Senate reinterpreted the rule. They said instead of needing 60 votes to cut off debate on a nomination, we're just going to require a simple majority. And Republicans didn't take it very well, as you might expect, because they're used to being able to block nominations. But what goes around comes around in the Senate, and when Republicans regained control of the Senate in 2017, and they had an opening, of course, from Justice Scalia's seat that had never been filled back in 2016, Republicans, in order to confirm Trump's nominee, Neil Gorsuch, they nuked the rest of the nominations filibusters, meaning you could no longer filibuster a Supreme Court nomination.
There's been talk among some Democratic progressive advocates that, hey, if the Democrats retake the Senate, say, in the next election, they should get rid of the filibuster altogether. Is that something you think either party would want to do?
So I think there's a lot of debate about it, and I think there's lots of disagreements even within the Democrats and even within sort of progressive Democrats who are announced or going to announce for president. The issue here really is, over the long term, plus over the future, does one party or the other benefit more from moving to a system of majority rule in the Senate? And many people would argue that Democrats have more to gain, right? That because they see using the tools of government and have kind of a pretty ambitious policy agenda of problems they want to fix, many people would argue that the only way for Democrats to really achieve those big goals, climate change, immigration reform, energy, transportation, civil rights, voting rights, the only way to get there would be to nuke the filibuster, right, so that a simple majority of the Senate could push its agenda through the Senate. Now, of course, the filibuster is pretty valuable to the Democrats when they're in the minority, as I think it's been driven home to them during the Trump administration. So I think it gives some senators cold feet, right? Thinking about the long term, do we benefit? Yes, we would. But would we want to see the Trump agenda pushed through by a Republican Congress? Maybe not. And so I think that's why you're seeing some mixed degrees of views about whether or not the filibuster should be kept or whether its time has come and gone.
When we talk about Congress in general, the word dysfunction comes up quite a bit with the partisan differences. Do you see a structural fix, tweaking the rules of the way the Senate and or the House work, as being something that could overcome that? Or is this dysfunction and this division coming from outside the chambers?
So it's really a bit of both. These are very polarized parties and very partisan parties, meaning that my team's for it, so your team's against it, even if it's not an ideological difference between the parties. And those types of differences, they make compromise hard, and they make constructing deals hard, right? Deals where both sides get something out of the policy. And so the rules complicated for sure, but the rules themselves, right? If we could change the rules overnight, it doesn't mean that those divisions are going to go away. And so, yes, Congress is struggling to legislate. It's been that way for 10 plus, if not 20 years. The rules make it even harder, particularly in the Senate. But sometimes lawmakers like to blame the rules, right? To say, well, don't put the blame on us, right? It's the other party, and we're doing whatever we can under the rules. And so I think there's some degree of deep down in many senators where they might actually like a system where they can blame the other party rather than having to come up with compromises within their own party to push ahead.
Now, people have been complaining about Congress since, I think, just before there was a Congress. Is this partly working as designed? Was the idea that, okay, we don't want an institution that can do radical changes really fast?
Well, scholars disagree about what the framers really wanted. My own view is if we look at the Constitutional Convention, if we look at the what we call the Articles of Confederation, right, what was in place before we got our current Constitution. The framers, whether it was Hamilton, whether it was Madison, they expressed a lot of frustration with that earlier Congress because of its supermajority rules, right? These framers had lived in a world where nothing much got done, and part of the impetus on designing the new Constitution was to overcome some of those problems to make a more energetic government that could actually do stuff. So, yes, it's a system that's slow, that divides parties, divides power between the branches, within the branch. And so we don't want to overestimate framers' enthusiasm for an active government. But neither do I think we want to just assume that they'd be happy with living in a world where not much ever got done.
Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Bender is a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution and professor of political science at George Washington University. She was with us to talk about the history of the filibuster in the Senate amid news that some Senate Democrats are thinking about getting rid of it if they enter the majority. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind about the coming government shutdown deadline and get his reaction to President Trump's State of the Union address. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.